Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Watch us on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. Also get your Stu Does America merch today at StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. Dan Andrus is here. We're going to talk a little Cash Patel. We're going to talk a little bit about a tale of sports betting gone wrong. We'll also look at what the country thinks of Donald Trump's performance so far. But we're going to start by doing the D.C. aviation disaster. Yeah, really ugly night last night. You just hate to see something like this happen. American Airlines flight, of course, collided with an Army helicopter near Reagan National. More than 30 bodies recovered. Took off from this airport just a couple weeks ago. It is a massive airport for people going in and out of D.C. Obviously, a lot of people flew in there for the inauguration, which was the case with me. Just a terrible, terrible incident. And you get the sense when you're there how tight everything is around that airport. I mean, you know, you're right on the water. There's lots of stuff going on. You know, there's helicopters everywhere. There's planes everywhere. It's very, very busy. I think it's the busiest runway in America. So very, very, very difficult place to fly, but has been very safe for a long time. DC crash took place in congested airspace shared by jets and helicopters. The areas near Washington's Reagan National Airport, which used to be called National, is a beehive of air traffic and requires many safeguards to avoid collisions. True. But those safeguards that were, we thought, in place. And then, of course, we haven't had an incident like this since, I think, back in 2009 in Buffalo. So it's been a long time. And that's a good thing. We have a pretty safe air system compared to some other countries. But, you know, I'm not willing to be too excited about that on a day like today. Here is the video. If you haven't seen it yet, it's you can see way in the background. You kind of see that flash. And then the plane goes down right there. It is odd when you look at it. I don't know if we have the replay on this one. Probably it's not on this video, but you see the plane, the helicopter. It looks like it's kind of coming from behind it. It's not really. It's there. You know, it's turning to its left, and it crashes into the Potomac below. No survivors are expected, of course, at this point. 67 people totally affected by this really just awful, awful tragedy. And it doesn't, you know, you look at it, it's like this plane is about to land at Reagan. You know, you have a plane kind of coming down and taking a left-hand turn to go into under the Reagan Airport. This is a commuter or passenger jet. It was filled with a bunch of like ice skaters, apparently, including a couple of Russian, well-known Russian ice skaters who were on the plane and are believed to be dead. And the way that the kind of run goes with the helicopters, the helicopters come right up the river, and that turn crosses the river. So you kind of have that intersection situation. They're right at the exact same altitude. It is really hard to understand how, if that's the plan, how it doesn't happen all the time, honestly, when it comes to collisions. Just a real, real bizarre incident. And a lot of people, when you see that at first, saw a lot of this online early, you know, said that looks intentional. And I will say the video does make it look intentional. You can't quite rule it out when you see the video, though there's no real belief that that's going on right now. There was a Stephen Ganyard who was talking about this on ABC News and describing, you know, how something like this could happen, because you think, you've got a helicopter driving straight, right? They're looking forward, and all of a sudden a big plane comes into their view. How does it run into the side of the plane? I mean, how does that even happen? Well, of course, it happens very, very quickly when you're talking about these speeds, but also there's a lot of distractions, and it is very, very difficult. Listen.
I can describe a little bit about what the visual perceptions might have been and where people might have not been able to see each other. So if you look at that horrific video, you see that the helicopter was flying south down the Potomac. The regional jet was landing runway 33, so it was coming up towards Northwest DC. So the helicopter appears to have hit the regional jet on the right side of the regional jet. So they're at co-altitude. You can see them at co-altitude. So If you're in the regional jet, you're focused on the runway in front of you. You're so low, nobody's thinking about anything about seeing the runway in front of you and landing the airplane safely. Your peripheral vision at night, particularly with something at a co-altitude, is almost non-existent. So there's just no way that you could imagine that the crew on board that regional jet would have seen this helicopter coming at them crossing right to left. In the helicopter, if they had seen the regional jet, and in their minds they said, well, this isn't the runway in use, so there wouldn't be any airplanes here. But they're at co-altitude and they're looking down the Potomac, but they're still pointing at the city of Alexandria, lots of lights in the background, and so the lights of the regional jet may very well have gotten drowned out in the background of the lights of the city, the lights of Reagan National, the lights of Alexandria.
I mean, it's hard to believe, of course, I'm not a pilot, but it's hard to believe that, you know, if that's the situation, which is pretty common. I mean, these flights are coming in every day. It's almost bizarre that it hasn't happened more. We will see, of course, with the investigation as we go on and see what the actual cause is of this. At the very base, though, of all of this, I think it's quite clear that it makes no sense whatsoever to have a helicopter flying at co-altitude with an approach to a runway. It doesn't make any sense whether you might avoid that collision 99 times out of 100, but like, it's not a sensible way to draw this up. And, you know, I think that's the story kind of across the country. We did a documentary not that long ago. It's called Countdown to the Next Aviation Disaster. And we didn't know how long that countdown was. Turns out it was 70 days. 70 days from the time this documentary came out to this horrible disaster. And we don't know the cause of it yet. We might wind up finding something, you know, out of the ordinary out. We do know that there was conversation between the air traffic control and this helicopter and the plane. They seemed to have awareness of where each other was on this journey and were unable to avoid it for whatever reason. We'll have more information of that as we go on. But it's just 70 days ago. This was going on and we were looking at just exactly this, right? Like, how far are we away from something like this happening? Because we were letting our air traffic control system and our overall aviation systems degrade at rapid paces for a very, very long time. This was something that you could see coming, frankly. We looked at all this stuff, and as we went through it, it was just jaw-dropping. You think of the United States as this like, you know, high tech country and we've got all the best stuff. And that's true in tons and tons of ways, but not with our air traffic control system here in this country. I talked to Rob Mark in the documentary. He's a guy who's an air traffic controller forever. He has been looking at this for a very long time and is trying to awaken people about what the heck is going on in our country. Watch.
There are many other incidents that happen on a weekly basis in our system that don't make the nightly news. It's because some controller or some pilot caught it before it got out of hand.
Within days of the close calls at Washington, Reagan, and JFK, the FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker issued a directive increasing the amount of rest controllers should get between shifts. But it did nothing to deal with the underlying problem, the shortage of controllers.
The warning signs are there, and we all wonder, is anybody listening?
Apparently not. That does seem like, unfortunately, the conclusion you have to come to in a moment like this. And when you really go down the road and look at the shortage of controllers, there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, we talk in the documentary about some of the DEI effects, and people are like, "Well, what are you saying that, you know, people who are people of color or can't do this job?" No, they absolutely can do this job. If they're the best at the job, they should have the job. However, another function of this is, it's not just hiring African Americans or Hispanics or whatever for these jobs. It's also avoiding hiring white guys for these jobs. White guys can be just as incompetent as any other race, of course. But when you have a large pool. I mean, it's, you know, a high percentage of the population that want to be air traffic controllers are white males. And when you start avoiding white males, you're starting to avoid some of the best people. Not all of them, but some of the best people for these jobs. We don't know for sure if this means there was some incompetence here from the air traffic control. But what we do know is that there's not enough air traffic controllers. A lot of the people that want to be air traffic controllers are being eliminated from those jobs. How bad is the problem nationwide? Really, really bad. You heard in that last clip, we actually talk about near misses at Reagan Airport. We've talked about that specific thing in the documentary and go very deep on the entire system as a whole.
Today, the FAA has about 1,000 fewer fully certified controllers than it did just 10 years ago, even though air traffic has increased. Major hubs and critical facilities are extremely understaffed. The FAA's Inspector General says 77% of critical facilities are staffed below the agency's 85% threshold, including the New York Terminal Radar Approach Control Site, which manages planes in and out of New York City's airports. That facility only had 54% of the fully trained staffers it needed last year. And callouts can snarl air travel across the entire country.
Half of the controllers in the country are working 6-day weeks, 10-hour days, and it's mandatory. I did some of that for a while when I was still a controller, and I got to tell you, it's a killer.
The shortage has caused delays and cancellations. It's led airlines to reduce flights to some cities because of congestion. And worst of all, as the relative number of controllers has declined, the number of near collisions between commercial aircraft has surged to nearly 3 per week.
We have the largest and the most complex aviation system in the world, and it works really well. But every so often, something just takes a wrong turn.
Just a wrong turn. That's really all it takes to turn one of these incidents that could have been avoided into a complete disaster like the one that we saw last night. And it's not just like, you know, these air traffic controllers. Some of them are incredibly smart and talented and working really, really hard. The vast majority of them are. But they're not given the tools to do the job well. It is incredible. The lack of technology that these guys are dealing with on a day-to-day basis, the lack of available tools that they need to do this job, which is a very, very difficult job, an incredibly confusing job for people to participate in. And we went into depth on that as well.
While putting together this episode, one of the things that struck us the most was how outdated our air traffic control system is.
Let's start with just the technology of air traffic control. Right. I think the average person would think we're a highly advanced country.
No, that's not the case for air traffic control.
Can you give me some concrete examples of the things they're doing that I think most Americans wouldn't even believe?
Well, one is paper flight strips. I mean,
Paper flight strips.
This is the in control towers.
Let me
show you one.
Today, like in 2024, air traffic controllers still use paper flight strips to track planes.
It comes off a little printer at the controller's workstation. And this one is quite recent. It's from last fall. It's Delta Airlines, that first thing there. It's a 737-9. It's going from SFO to Minneapolis-St. Paul. And these other things are little waypoints that the departure is going to involve.
The FAA has been trying to replace paper flight strips with an electronic system since 1983, but being a government project, it's behind schedule and over budget.
1983, they've been trying to do this, and they haven't been able to do it yet. Absolutely incredible that this is going on in this country. And who knows if it led to this, you know, this lack of technology led to this particular incident, although it certainly makes these incidents much, much more likely as we go. It's not just paper flight strips, though. This is an entire problem with the whole system. And you know, lots of other countries have already fixed these problems. Like, we're the ones that are sitting here with ancient technology trying to act as if we have the most advanced flight systems in the world. I've read that they still utilize floppy disks.
Yep.
No.
No.
Please tell me
that's, that's in a report that came out last year.
The report, which is public and published in November, is horrifying. The FAA uses tracking beacons so old that they can't get replacement antennas. In some cases, they're using pre-digital 50-year-old radar system with sparse replacement parts. Those with the expertise to fix them have aged out of the workforce. The FAA uses more than 1,000 instrument landing systems that are no longer supported by the manufacturer. And amazingly, the FAA also lacks the intellectual property rights to build replacement parts for the archaic technology.
This big safety report got virtually no attention in the general media and only very limited attention in the aviation media.
That's Robert Poole, who's been working on this forever. Great guy. And he has been trying to get this thing fixed, trying to alert Congress, has almost gotten over the finish line several times trying to improve the system. But every time something happens and some political interest shuts it down, maybe this will be the thing. You know, if you're in Congress and you're listening to this today, call Robert Poole. He can help you with this. Help get us, I don't know, to this century. That would be nice. It's really, really frustrating when you look at this from the beginning. The documentary goes into all sorts of stuff as well. You know, the DEI was a big focus. Donald Trump talked about that today, whether DEI was any factor on this. Again, we don't know yet. It's too early to know. But there was sort of talk about what these possible causes could be. And Donald Trump discussed that at length in his press conference today.
They put a big push to put diversity into the FAA's program. Then another article, the Federal Aviation Administration. This was before I got to office recently, second term. The FAA is actively recruiting workers who suffer severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, and other mental and physical conditions under a diversity and inclusion hiring initiative spelled out on the agency's website. Can you imagine? These are people that are, I mean, actually, their lives are shortened because of the stress that they have. Brilliant people have to be in those positions. And their lives are actually shortened, very substantially shortened because of the stress where you have many, many planes coming into one target.
It's a really freaking difficult job. And it is a really stressful existence. And it is true. You kind of listen to Trump say that. You know, like Trump at times can make statements off the top of his head, and he's, you know, like not always exactly accurate. He's not always known for the precise nature of his public statements. But I can assure you, what he's talking about there is real. That actually happened. Talking about major psychiatric disabilities, they were trying to recruit people for these jobs, which is not the type of job that you want someone who has major I don't know what job is correct for major psychiatric disorder. Maybe the head coach of the New York Jets. I don't know what the right job is for that person, but I don't think it's FAA head. I'm pretty sure that's not the one to go with. We go into the DEI stuff a lot in the documentary. And by the way, this is up on YouTube, youtube.com/ I think it's Blaze TV's YouTube page is on. Go there. It's actually, if you want to find it easily, I can go to Twitter or x.com/StuDoesAmerica. I have it pinned to the top if you want to watch the documentary. It goes through all of this stuff, including I talked to a guy who sued the U.S. government because he was a white guy and they wouldn't let him get a job as an air traffic controller because he was a white guy. He passed with flying colors all of the technical tests. He was got 100 on the exam and then was eliminated from his job because he failed the biographical survey, which asked him questions that didn't actually straight out come and say, are you white, but tried to get to that answer and eliminated a lot of people who had real talent in showed a real promise in science in high school and all these things. Instead of, you know, giving a bonus to a candidate like that, it actually punished candidates like that. What that says about the government's opinion of people of color is a whole nother situation. I would call it straight out racism by the U.S. government. And that's what it seems like the courts are saying as well. So you have all of that in there. I encourage you to go check out the documentary in its entirety. But I want to leave you with kind of where we were left there. looking toward the future, a future that should be bright in a country like the United States, but a future that's kind of filled with fear once you get this information in your head. You can go, you get on a plane, you take off, you land, everything's fine. And that's the way it's going to be for almost everybody. And the fact that that we can move people across the country at 600 miles an hour, mostly safely, is a miracle. It's a great accomplishment. But you don't want to take what we have, which is a safe air traffic control system, a safe aviation system, and destroy it. And that's what we've been doing for multiple years. We've been degrading that system for a very long time for terrible reasons. And now we're facing situations like the one we're in now. I hope this is the only incident we see for another, 20 years almost. I hope that's true. But there's reason to believe that it isn't. And so we kind of went through all of this information. You can get it all in the documentary. It's up on my Twitter page. And this is sort of where we were left at the end.
The reality is, flying in the United States is still very safe. But air safety isn't something we can or should take for granted. It's an incredibly complex system, more than most realize. The shortage of controllers is real, and a job that requires constant focus. It's not good if they're showing up to work fatigued and short-staffed. The fact that ideologues attempted to rig the hiring process to deny qualified applicants on the basis of race, that bureaucrats are stalling on obvious modernization proposals, and that the administration is pretending everything is fine when there are three close calls every week. Those are canaries in a coal mine. The race is the most important question of all. What will have to happen for our leaders to do something? Will they take the initiative, or will they wait until a close call becomes a human tragedy?
All right, let me tell you about a great movie that is out in theaters right now. It's from Angel Studios. The question asked, how far will a teacher go to save a kid on the brink of losing everything? Angel Studios is the studio behind Sound of Freedom. This is a movie called Brave the Dark. It's out in theaters now. It's an inspiring true story about a troubled teen struggling to survive in a world that's let him down. Haunted by torturous childhood memories, Nate Williams finds himself engulfed in darkness when his drama teacher, Mr. Dean, bails him out of jail and takes him in. Nate's got to confront, his past, and he's got to confront it before it leads to his own destruction. Brave the Dark reminds us that one meaningful connection can change everything. This powerful film is going to leave you uplifted, it's going to leave you inspired, and it's going to show you the strength of compassion and the impact of never giving up on someone. Glenn saw this movie, loved it. He was raving about it on radio the other day. Go check it out. Brave the Dark is the movie. It's in theaters right now. You can get your tickets at angel.com/stew. Angel.com/stew. The movie is Brave the Dark. Get tickets now. Angel.com/stew.
Schon wieder Bewerberflaute? Sie schalten Anzeige um Anzeige. Das nervt und ist doch viel zu teuer. Stopp! Raus aus der Recruiting-Spirale. Mit StepStone All Jobs bekommen Sie alle Anzeigen für ein Jahr in einem Paket zu einem fixen Preis. So sparen Sie bis zu 75% Kosten pro Bewerbung und sind jederzeit flexibel. Jetzt Termin vereinbaren auf stepstone.de/alljobs. StepStone. Einfach die richtigen Talente finden für alle Jobs.
I'm joined now by Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News and host of the CBN Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me, Stu.
All these hearings that we're having over the past week, we've got the Tulsi Gabbard thing going on, the RFK Jr. thing going on, and Kash Patel today was kind of the big one. He's going, obviously, for the FBI, head of the FBI, he is, I think, seen as, it looks likely he will get through, first of all. And second of all, he's kind of seen as a guy who is going to be aggressive in this role. Like, look really, maybe a little bit more deeply than the Biden administration did when it comes to conservatives being affected by the law. And maybe, not be investigating political enemies all the time. At least that's what the right is saying. You look at Kash Patel, first of all, you think he's going to get through. And second of all, what do you think about the job he'll do?
It does seem like he's going to get through. I mean, that seems to be a foregone conclusion. Even opponents of his in this hearing have been saying this as I've been watching. They're kind of saying it looks like, you will be if you're confirmed. It looks like that'll happen. So, yes, I think he will. And then the second question, as far as like what's he going to do, being aggressive in this? I kind of hope so, because I've been beating this drum for some time now, especially after reporting on the Mark Houck situation there and going into the weeds on that case and looking at how patently absurd it was that that thing came to federal charges and that federal agents were sent to his house with guns drawn and
remind people
terrifying his kids.
Remind people of that Mark Houck case. I know we talked about it at the time, but it's been a little while.
Yeah, so his was a little different than like the FACE Act ones that are like blocking the entrances, supposedly, which we talked to another one who says she wasn't at all. That's a different story.
But Mark Houck, clinics, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mark Houck regularly protested out in front of a Planned Parenthood in Philadelphia. And there are these volunteers at Planned Parenthoods around the country that are escorts. They'll help people go in and walk them in to get their abortions. Like, what a fulfilling job that is. But but they do it, right? And so there's this one guy there who's particularly awful. And, you know, Mark would be there with his kids. They'd be trying to minister to people, sharing the gospel and whatnot. And one time this guy, one of the escorts, gets in his kid's face and starts saying cuss words and swearing and everything else. And so Houck just shoves him away, right? And just is like, you know, like anybody would do if you get in the kid's your kid's face, right? Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's it stopped there. It was just that shove. Well, the guy pressed charges. It got thrown out in local court. The guy didn't even show up, actually, to the cases. Like, they kept going into court, and then he just didn't even bother showing up. So it gets tossed. Well, then miraculously out of nowhere, this thing, he gets these federal charges slapped on him. And there's just a whole lot of crazy details in this case. Like, even though the attorneys for Mark were saying, you have no case here, but we'll still voluntarily come in, the prosecutors just ignored that and sent federal agents to his house. Guns drawn, cars surrounding it, you know, and he's got a lot of kids. So they were all, of course, naturally terrified. Mm-hmm. And then also the fact that the federal, you know, prosecutors, what I learned was that they will not take a case unless there's like a 95%+ chance they're going to win it. And all the experts I talked to looking at this case were like, there's no case here. They're going to lose. And it went down in a heap really quickly, and it was out. Got thrown out. And so a rare loss, but like you made me leave it left with the question, how did this go from being tossed out, a blatant case? It's on camera. You can see the whole interaction is on the, you know, security cameras. How does this get then picked up and made a huge example of?
Yeah, it's that transition that's really peculiar in this one, because you know, you have that situation where it wasn't a national news story, really. Like, you know, he was charged and people talked about it a little bit in certain circles, but it was not like a story that rose to the top of the you know, ABC nightly news. This was a story that was really only known by people who are very much in the pro-life movement, and most importantly, people who are very much in the pro-abortion movement. They knew this case. They wanted him to be punished for his actions of trying to save children's lives or whatever. And so there's some transition there. There's some way that information made it all the way up to the chain to a federal charge. And is that what Kash Patel is going to look into? Like, how did that even occur?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. One of the many things that he's going to look into. I mean, there's an FBI memo targeting quote unquote radical traditionalist Catholics, which just cracked me up. Oh, these wearing their rosaries and walking around. You got to watch out for him. You got to watch out for him. I mean, nothing else scary going. We don't have, you know, Venezuelan gangs taking over apartment complexes or anything like that. Just watch out for these traditionalist Catholics. They'll get you.
The Vatican is a country. It doesn't even have an army. I mean, come on.
Oh, man. But yeah, so Senator Hallie was bringing up some of these. Remember parents going into, you know, those hearings, the local school board hearings.
Yeah.
And they were sort of labeled domestic terrorists, essentially. How does that happen? Where did that all come down? So they're going to be looking into some of these things and more. And I think actually that's worthy of it, because, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, they're just playing politics, you know, Democrats, Republicans going back and forth with this stuff. But I feel like we've sort of crossed the Rubicon here of actual weaponization of the federal government. Like, there might be little flare-ups that have been really small here and there on each side over the years, But the Biden administration really seemed to take it to an absolutely new level. Of course, Trump being the primary example, where they were just like, you know, inventing and making a collage of different legal things together to try to invent charges, which the American people apparently decided was a total sham.
I can't wait to see.
Because they didn't care about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see texts. I can't wait to see messages on this stuff. I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be a fascinating reveal of the very ugly underbelly of the way we prosecute crimes in this country, especially at the federal level. And I would add on, I don't know if this is going to be exactly in his purview, but I would add on, I would like to have the same information about the people who were hiding from us, the American people, the mental decline of Joe Biden. This was a massive, massive scandal. It has already been well reported on, at least at the early stages of it have been reported on. The New York Times, I mean, identified the six people who were doing it. We need to have those texts. We need to have those messages. We need to know what they knew at that time, because that can't happen to a country. You can't just have a guy who's a vegetable running the country. Like, that's just not okay. I know we loved it back in the Woodrow Wilson era, but I think we leave that one in the past. We try to avoid it going forward.
Well, isn't it insane, like, talking about a vegetable running the country? And it's like, they hid him for so long. They literally, he would hardly come out. And like, you watch what's going on now, and it feels insane. I mean, if I know it's in the early going, so there's going to be a little more than usual, but they're doing things. They're out here addressing the country. They're out here reacting to stuff. You know, obviously we just had a tragedy, but you have the government moving. Like, whereas before it'd be like, where's, something would be happening. And Biden would be like, well, he went to bed at 6 o'clock in the evening. And you're like, what? Like, what is happening here?
There's a lid. There's a lid on the rest of the day, Dan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's a lid. There's a lid on the day. But it really made me think just the sense, regardless of what you think about what Trump's doing. I watched the last 4 years and I'm like, all they cared about was telling me how many gays they had in office, how many, transgender drag queens were showing up at the White House that day. That's pretty much 90% of what this administration seemed to do. And your documentary, Stu, talking about all the DEI stuff, like, well, they're not focused on being safe with the air traffic control. They're also focused on just how do we make it safe and drag queens. Like, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Don't even get me started on Pete Buttigieg's tweets on this today, which are infuriating. Before you go, though, I want to hit you on one sports issue. We were able to, by the way, Dan and I, to see the Philadelphia Eagles versus the Rams in the snow, which mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. Obviously, it wound up working out, so I'm okay. I'm okay with the result. But that was a lot of fun, Dan. And we, of course, we've been talking sports since we were kids. And you, of course, a huge Celtics fan. Former Boston Celtic Terry Rozier is now apparently involved in an illegal betting probe. And this is fascinating because they're not even saying like he was just, he went on FanDuel or whatever, placed a couple of bets, which, you're not allowed to do as a player. But no, it seems that he was apparently manipulating his performance for some sort of betting scheme.
That's what the allegation is in these reports that are surfacing now. And I'm hoping it's not true because I really like Scary Terry. It was a fun couple seasons when he was on the Celtics in the early years of Tatum and Brown, and a great player. But it's like, the guy's making like $25 million a year just on his NBA. Who knows how much he's making in endorsements and whatever else. I mean, you're talking tens and tens of millions. He's got a contract for $100 million. Like, what are you doing? I mean, it just really makes you realize that greed is real. I mean, I don't understand. Like, I just don't understand. Now, I've never made $25 million in a year. So I would imagine greed can hit everyone, but it just seems like at some point, like, what would you even, how can you spend that much money? There are so many questions. Like, I don't even understand how you can then become willing to risk it all. It's not even just greed, right? Like, it's like, you're so greedy. I mean, you're going to be an episode of American Greed, where they're like, and Terry Rozier. And it's just wild to me that, despite being uber elite and rich and in an amazing career, you're willing to risk it all.
It's amazing that because, like, as you point out, he could be banned for life for this. And he's halfway through this $100 million contract where he's making $25 million a year. he could lose out on that. And like, you know, there's no way. I mean, what's he taking in? I mean, if he's lucky, he's taking in five, maybe let's say low six figures on some sort of betting scheme like this. I mean, it couldn't be much more than that, I don't think, because there's limits on how much you can bet. And these sports books would not take the money.
It's red flags, too. Like, and then all these big bets come in, like, the Porter Jr., his brother that got caught, right?
Yeah.
Doing it. Like weird bets, like, oh, on Porter Jr. to get less than 4 points. It's like, and he fakes an injury, and it's like, and there's like $1 million on that. Like, who's betting that? Right. No one's betting that,
no,
right? Like, so
that.
It stands out.
Yeah, it really is very, very bizarre. But, you know, people will do dumb things. And I will say, Dan, your next contract was going to be 4 years, $100 million with this show. I don't want to start the negotiation early, but just so you know, don't start gambling because you blow the whole thing up.
Wait, so $100 million, I guess I could go right over to FanDuel now. I could put down $110 million into the account, right? Because I got it all coming back and I should win. Is this how they think? I don't know.
I don't know either. It doesn't make any sense to me. Dan Andrews, managing editor of CBN News. Be sure to check him out on CBN's Quick Start podcast. You get it every morning. It gives you a great little download of what's going on that's really important in the day from a Christian perspective. Head over there and subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
We're just talking a little bit about Kash Patel, his hearing going on as well. Of course, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., that's all going on as well. Consuming Capitol Hill. In case you were wondering, looking at the markets as to whether these people will be confirmed into these roles, this gives you a sense as to what people think. And it pretty much aligns with where I am right now. Kash Patel is at 94%. To get approved. So that one seems, as Dan mentioned, kind of like a foregone conclusion. It seems like it's going to happen. RFK Jr. is at 73%. Not a sure thing. There could still be some surprises maybe in that one. It'll be interesting to see, like, you know, where if Mitch McConnell comes out on that. You know, he's one of those. There's been rumors that he would oppose RFK Jr. You feel like Collins and Murkowski. Yeah, there's a good chance they're no's on a lot of these people. If you lose four Republican senators, though, that's when you're toast. But if you're one of these nominees, so you look at this and you see, well, McConnell has been kind of outspoken. There's, you know, Cassidy's a doctor. He was kind of questioning him on Medicare and Medicaid. There's some questions on RFK Jr., but still favored to get through 73%. I think that the longest odds of getting through, which I still think she has a good chance, but it's Tulsi Gabbard. You know, it's interesting when you look at the field. At this point, I view most of these politicians as reading the room pretty well, realizing that Donald Trump is very popular. He just won re-election. There's not a lot of opposition to Donald Trump, honestly, when it comes to this stuff. There's very few people who are going to take stands against Donald Trump, even if they don't agree with him. I'm not trying to say that they're all MAGA. They're not. But a lot of these people just will sit on their hands right now because Trump has been in a really good stretch. They're not going to oppose him. They're going to give Donald Trump the people that he wants. The one sector of the Republican Party that I think might be vulnerable to that sort of analysis on the other side would be the national security types. And a lot of them look at Tulsi Gabbard, who, again, I like Tulsi Gabbard. I don't love all of her positions, but I do like her as a person. She seems like she has the right sort of head for this role. But she, you know, her relationship with, you know, going to meet Assad, not a relationship, I guess, but going to see Assad was something that a lot of people on the national security right really did not like. And that opposition, I think, is real and might not be spoken all that loud, but could sink her nomination. She's at 47% right now. A couple of other things. Donald Trump is at a 49% overall approval rating right now. He's over 50% with 50 to 59-year-olds right now as well. Again, this doesn't sound incredibly high, but it is higher than Trump was basically his entire first term. So this has been a good sort of a honeymoon as he's starting this period out. It's going to be interesting to see how long it lasts, because, you know, the media is coming and coming with a new attack dog, we're told, which is who? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is embracing her role as an attack dog against Trump. I'm sorry, what else has she ever done in her entire life? A bartender. There was bartender and then attack dog against Trump. There's never been another role that she's had in her entire life. Just those two things. I think she probably was a better bartender, frankly. But apparently we're supposed to be terrified that AOC is going into attack dog mode here in the coming months. So, Donald Trump, I hope you're ready for it. Be scared. Any time in life that you have to make a big change, it's hard, and it's especially true when you're planning to buy or sell a home. It's really complicated, takes a lot of time, takes a lot of research, takes a lot of jumping through hoops, and of course the stakes are just about as high as you can get when it comes to your finances. So what do? You need to find a real estate agent that you can trust to help you through all of this nonsense. You want someone who's not just an ordinary agent, you want someone who's on your side, who really knows what they're doing. You want the best. Where do you go to find that person? You go to realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. They'll pair you with the top selling real estate agents in your area, people who really know the game, right? Like, they understand what's going on. They understand the market. They understand how to be a leader, how to be a closer. Someone you can trust is really, really important when you're going through a big transaction like this. If you're thinking about buying or selling your home or both, please get in touch with them. You'll see what I mean. Check it out now, realestateagentsitrust.com. The name says it all. This is a free service to you, by the way. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. Well, the Trump White House is like, hey, we're not going to just have the same three networks here all the time and give them all the questions. We're going to have, some people of the alternative media able to come here and cover the White House. They said that, and now they have 7,000 new media press applications. 7,000. I assume the Blaze is probably in that bunch. Hopefully we're getting in there every once in a while as well. A lot of interest to cover this administration, and it'll be nice to actually see some people asking questions that aren't intentionally, an intentional attempt to sink the administration as their only goal. Just give us some truth. Tough questions, but give us some truth. That would be great. Also, Donald Trump is doing these press conferences, and he's talking so much and so quickly that stenographers at the White House are having trouble. Donald Trump talks so much that even his White House stenographers are struggling to keep up. There are 22,000 words on Inauguration Day, another 17,000 with Trump visit disaster sites in North Carolina. He is a guy who likes to talk a little bit. I will say it's probably better for the stenographers to have a lot of English words than what the last president offered, which was a bunch of a lot of just garbled old man nonsense. So it's kind of, at least you know what the words are. They might be coming fast, might be hard to type, but at least, they're words. So that's a nice bonus. And finally, former U.S. Senator Bob Menendez has been sentenced 11 years in prison for taking bribes and acting as an agent of Egypt. They searched his home and found $480,000. Some of it stuffed inside boots and pockets of clothing, along with gold bars worth an estimated $150,000 and a luxury car. I will say, if you can't take bribes in gold bars, what can you do in this country? This used to be a great nation where we would go and we would make sure whenever we did something illicit for a businessman in the area, we would be able to get gold bars and bribes and be able to live a life of luxury. And now look at us. We're falling apart in front of their eyes. So Bob Menendez, by the way, I love what he tried to do. He's like, can you believe what they're doing to me, sending me to prison? It's political prosecution, just like Donald Trump. Did you hear that? You can pardon me, Don. I don't know if I'm with you. I think what happened to you is really bad. And what happened to me is very similar, so you should pardon me, too. No word yet if that one is going to be successful. Okay, so here's what happened. Capitalism does some amazing things. Capitalism at work is incredible. Like, it creates all sorts of opportunities for people and has changed the entire world. But not everybody has the appearance to get a job. Like, for example, let me show you this guy. I'll describe him for podcast listeners. You know, he's got long hair, looks kind of mean. He's got the unlit cigarette in his mouth. He's wearing, for some reason, a stormtrooper shirt in the other picture. Looks kind of intimidating and mean. Maybe a villain. Maybe a gang member, right? You might say, gosh, why would you say that about him, Stu? I mean, what are you revealing about yourself? Well, I'm not revealing anything about myself because that's how he describes himself. He's like, I look like a gang member. I don't know what to do for work. This is who I am. Well, he's come up with something, and he's used capitalism to get there. It's incredible. It's true. A villain for hire. He's got a new villain for hire service that lets weak boyfriends look cool by beating up fake tough guys in front of their girlfriends. So they use the example of, like, they're at dinner, a couple, the husband or boyfriend goes to the bathroom. This guy that looks like a gang member in his own words comes up, starts harassing the girl, and then he comes back and gets to be a tough guy, beat this guy up, looks cool in front of his girlfriend. You pay him a little bit on the side, everybody's happy. So there you go. A totally sane choice for your relationship. Hey, it's almost Valentine's Day, remember?